This is a Suno India production and you are listening to the Suno India show. In early February, the Parliamentary Standing Committee on Science and Technology tabled its report on the DNA Technology Regulation Bill. If passed, the bill will establish a national DNA data bank in India for the first time. Two members of the committee filed dissent notes. AIMIM President Asaduddin Owaisi and CPI leader Binoy Biswam said that the report does not address privacy concerns and possible targeting of vulnerable groups. In his note, Owaisi says, and I quote, "The number of those arrested in India is gigantic. Therefore, the size of the DNA data bank is perhaps going to be the largest consolidated collation of citizens' biological information, the most sensitive of all personal information. Its proper safeguarding and strict security are essential for the nation's safety and security. The bill aims to identify and store the DNA of offenders, suspects under trials, missing persons, and unknown deceased persons. It would accredit DNA laboratories, setting a standard for quality control, besides, of course, maintaining a DNA database. It has been in the works for 15 years now. Critics, however, say that it does not have enough safeguards against misuse. On this episode of the Suno India show, we'll take a closer look at those arguments. Hi, I am Surya Tapa Mukherjee, your host for this episode. I spoke to Rohan Garg, an Associate Policy Counsel at Internet Freedom Foundation. He is one of the experts consulted by the Standing Committee for its report. So to begin with, can you just outline what are the main problems with this bill, according to you?
The main issue, I think, is threat of DNA-based targeting, either of marginalized groups or religious minorities. And that is mentioned and acknowledged by the committee. But as is the case with a lot of recommendations of the committee, what the committee said is that, okay, they'll keep some of the relevant clauses and put the burden on the government to prove on the floor of parliament that, okay, this is not as harmful. Another issue is that, so this bill was drafted before the Puttaswamy judgment 2018, which enshrined the right to privacy as fundamental and imposed certain obligations that need to be fulfilled when infringing upon those rights. There are certain standards called the proportionality standards which it has, which this bill doesn't fulfill. DNA data is obviously very sensitive data, and even for say criminals, it is such data cannot be used willy-nilly. To use and process that sort of data requires this bill to be Puttaswamy compliant and meet those obligations, which this bill doesn't necessarily do. It's also pretty wide-ranging. So DNA technology has a lot of issues in and of itself. It is useful, but it's not infallible. There are, let me, misuses. It's also reflected in our courts. I believe the Madhya Pradesh High Court had said that, okay, you know, just because DNA evidence, you can show using evidence that through DNA that someone is present at a crime scene, that doesn't mean that link is causal. So you cannot just use DNA evidence cannot be the main sort of thrust of your argument in any conviction. So that I think that sort of scientific humility is something that's missing from this bill, because it also, and this sort of ties into the fact that it is a very wide range of collection of data. So it has something called crime scene indices, which basically sort of are all sort of DNA material that may be gathered from a crime scene. Whereas what many people are saying, okay, no, why do you need to collect so much DNA? Why should it be stored? So these are sort of the main issues. I think there are a couple of other issues, but I think this is the sort of main scope of issues.
First of all, like you mentioned, the dissent notes that were given by the two committee members. So can you explain a bit how DNA can be used to sort of target certain communities? Can you give some examples?
Certain realities of our criminal justice system have to be, you know, acknowledged. According to the National Crime Records Bureau, 16.6% of convicts, 18.7% of under trials, and 35.8% of detainees are Muslim, even though the population makes up only 14.2% of the overall population. Now, given these sort of statistics, and I think the overall larger political climate, it is, you can see how the usage of DNA data could be another sort of another star in the constellation of data that is used to target people and sort of through a variety of ways. Say if I'm detained in a case in which there's no sort of reason for me to be detained, but my data then goes onto the database. Then later on, if my DNA is sort of found incidentally at a crime scene, there is an obvious case for bias to be introduced that would result in, say, the apprehension of me, say, even if I belong to, say, a religious minority. But this works for, I think, for example, with Dalits, you have similar amounts of, say, over disproportionate amounts of representation amongst the convicts under trials and detainees.
The committee has focused on this, that maybe the data of those who are under trials or those who are just suspects, that it should not be stored, like their DNA should not be stored. But at the same time, I think they did not ask for it to actually be struck down from the bill. Can you explain like what the conversation has been about this?
Like with many other sort of clauses, what they seem to have said is that, you know, this is an issue and we acknowledge such concerns. But at the same time, we'll keep this clause in for now. And because this report will be reviewed and on the basis of this, the government will draft the new version of the bill. We leave it to the government to decide and sort of allay such fears about profiling.
So in terms of like the Puthuswamy guidelines and privacy in general, like how could this bill sort of be more compliant with privacy concerns?
So I think fundamentally it's whether such a database, for example, should exist at all. I think under the principle of rule of law, right, you have the principle of maintaining that everyone's innocent until proven guilty. Given the establishment of such a database, the inherent tendencies in our criminal justice system would perhaps amplify biases and result in unfair targeting, which is one way, for example, they would constitute an attack on privacy.
To obtain the DNA of an arrested person for offences carrying a sentence of up to 7 years, their written consent is required. For more serious crimes that carry a higher sentence or the death penalty, DNA can be taken without consent. Even for smaller crimes, if no consent is given, the investigating officer can still obtain DNA if allowed by a magistrate. Garg says that these are ways of bypassing reasonable safeguards.
All bodily material that is to be used for evidence is to be taken only with the consent of the individual. However, the bill does allow for the overriding of this consent in case the suitable level of magistrate sort of says, okay, you have permission to do so. Whereas I think all throughout the report and in the earlier part of the bill, it has been acknowledged that DNA material has to be taken only with the consent of the person. But such override clauses then are just a very obvious way to sidestep those obligations of consent. And I think that would also constitute a significant attack on privacy.
As Garg explained earlier, the bill has to comply with the Puthuswamy judgment. He's referring to the 4-bench judgment in Justice Case Puthuswamy versus Union of India that was passed in 2018. In this landmark judgment, the Supreme Court held that the right to privacy was a constitutionally protected right in India. The judgment laid down that laws should have a legitimate state aim and the proposed actions must be necessary for a democratic society. The extent of interference must be proportionate to its need. And there should be procedural guarantees to check against the abuse of state interference.
Could you like just briefly speak a bit about the Puthuswamy guidelines and how guidelines are not being followed?
Key one here is proportionate, where the infringement upon the individual's right to privacy has to be sort of proportionate to whatever method it's being used for. Now, the constitution of a DNA database might or can be construed to be disproportionate. There is no, even if DNA evidence is to be used, a database which stores it, and it should be added for indefinite period. So there are other acts, the Habitual Offenders Act, even that sort of lays down a period for which the individual's data will be kept. Whereas this Bill does not seem to lay down any sort of data retention timelines. That indefinite sort of processing of this data seems disproportionate to the aim of, say, fighting crime, because you can just use data in a particular case and you can say, okay, after a case has sort of been completed, you just delete that data. So I think that is a significantly disproportionate step. There also has to be existence of procedural safeguards, which again, in terms of who all is authorized to access this DNA data, the bill and the report are not exactly very clear. So there are these various issues which we have obviously proposed that, you know, this bill go through at least one more round of Puttaswamy compliance by an independent judicial panel.
Garg also says that although the bill aims to streamline the use of DNA in India, its budget simply isn't enough to allow for that.
It's about, firstly, it's about capacity. So as this bill itself states, and as the report acknowledges, there has to be some provision for building capacity, right? So the bill, for example, estimates around 20 crore, and most people are saying this is underestimation, for just building up capacity to deal with this. So for example, the Indian justice system doesn't have this capacity, A, in terms of data processing labs for DNA, and B, in terms of training and sort of supervising material for, say, litigators, prosecutors, and judges to sort of, okay, acclimatize themselves to the usage of DNA evidence. This then comes back to the usage of DNA evidence itself, where within the scientific community, there's perhaps naturally a much more humble approach to the limits of DNA, where to use DNA to imply causality has always been looked at as some sort of overreach. Okay, if there are other sort of reasons why, for example, you suspect someone, then DNA can be used as a supplement to buttress your claims. The Supreme Court also, in a certain, I think in this case called Rajiv Singh versus State of Bihar, has dismissed DNA evidence, saying it's been improperly analyzed. So I think leaping to a DNA bank, I think first, if at all such technologies have to be used and implemented at a large scale, that capacity building has to be built up. After that, then such conversations can happen, because otherwise, I think there's not just potential for misuse, but also just like erroneous judgments that could significantly impact people's lives.
So in terms of the regulatory board, do you think would be beneficial to have like a board that sort of oversees like this whole process of collection and storage?
I will err on the side of regulation and say, look, DNA technologies are proliferating across the world. If you don't regulate it, I think it is likely that they will grow without any sort of care about these concerns. So I think in case the government wants to statutorily allow DNA sort of collection, it is a good idea to have a regulatory board. But again, there are concerns. As the committee, the standing committee has tried to do, the independence of the board is paramount. And I think they've made some recommendations to that effect. Are they enough? I'm not sure. Secondly, I think as MP Asaduddin Owaisi has pointed out, given that this bill was drafted pre Puttaswamy, given that we don't even have a personal data protection bill we have a bill, we don't have an act. And given that the sensitive nature of DNA data, Asaduddin Owaisi had recommended that any future data protection authority, as contemplated by the personal data protection bill, for example, would have the power to sort of look into the data security and privacy aspects all the technical aspects of security with respect to DNA processing. So in a certain sense, there would still be one body to which this regulatory board would be answerable. But I think the committee struck that down, with Jairam Ramesh going as far as to say that he didn't think these two issues are connected at all. I don't think that's the case. I think whether or not you go through a data protection authority, it is clear that this bill would need some people who are not just from this, who have domain-based expertise, but also security-based expertise and technical expertise that can ensure that this data doesn't leak or is not misused.
In this episode, we looked at the privacy concerns of storing DNA in a data bank. To learn more about the science of DNA and how DNA is used in police investigations, Tune in to our previous episode about the DNA Bill. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Suno India Show. You can listen to it on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and any other podcast app of your choice.